Telling you, bro. What's been happening, bro?
Not too much.
Still hitting more Peggy-O's.
This is Shane Terrio. And you are listening to The Riff Raff. Hey everybody, welcome back to Riff Raff from a sort of extended hiatus. It wasn't intentional. I did get a lot of emails inquiring, when are we going to get another Riff Raff? Here you go. Sorry, I've been busy touring and sometimes it's really hard to get these things done even when you have downtime in hotels and things. So I'll try to be a little quicker in the forthcoming episodes, putting them out. And as always, thanks for your support. A couple things, you know, if you're just tuning in today, first time listener, this I have like 30 some odd other episodes of Riff Raff. Everybody from a lot of great guitar players on there. If you're a guitar player, from John Scofield to you know, Sonny Landreth, Dweezil Zappa, Mike Stern, and more great ones to come. I've also got you know, some singers, Sammy Hagar, all kinds of people, Daryl Hall, John Oates. Try to bring you the best of the best. And we're not limited to vocals and guitars, some great drummers. Check it, there's a little something for everybody, that's my point. Also, I've been a little more active on my YouTube channel, Shane Terrio's Guitar Channel. Check it out, posting some things. Come on, give me some support. Like the page, also Instagram, Shane Terrio Guitar. And, you know, if you haven't already done so, all I ask for this is go to iTunes or one of those social media sites, show me a little support. By the way, you're listening to a track called Four on the Floor from my record called Dirty Power. Jim Keltner on drums, Hutch Hutchison on bass, and all of my music is available on iTunes, Amazon, or my website, shaneterrio.com. Yes, I am doing some shameless self-promotion, and it's my show, so what the hey, somebody's got to do it. Anyway, enough of that. Let's get to today's guest. Right, my guest today is Mr. Phil DeGree. Phil's a guitarist that, as you can hear, can sometimes seem to defy description. I think maybe the closest anyone's ever come is to describing Phil's style is none other than Steve I himself, who said, quote, Phil's approach to the guitar sounds like John Coltrane met Mel Brooks at a party for Salvador Dali. There you go. Phil is a highly creative, inventive musician. his use of the Lenny Bro techniques of harmonics and seven string, he's taken to another level. He uses all these dense harmonies and beautiful chords. You'll hear his use of effects is really fresh too, in my opinion. I've been a fan of his for a while, and he's got a lot of other fans, amongst them Charlie Hunter, Steve Vai, Mike Stern. All these people appeared on his record, Just Do It, Just Do It. And he's got four records I know of, Just Do It, Innuendo Out the Other, Hello Dolly, and the most recent one, Mask and You Shall Deceive, recorded at J. Griggs Studio in outside of New Orleans. And a little interesting side note, Jay Graydon, the great LA studio guitar player of Steely Dan fame and many, many other things, he mixed Mask and You Shall Deceive. And he's a fan of Phil's too. So we talk about all kinds of things. You'll get a sneak peek into a Lenny Bro lesson that Phil had recorded, and you'll hear them one-on-one back in the early 80s, and he'll discuss all kinds of things. There's a lot of playing in this one. You'll hear how he almost became one of the guitarists in Steely Dan. I didn't know that story. So check him out, Mr. Phil DeGree. All right, I'm walking up stairs to his apartment past the No Jehovah Witnesses sign, and Phil's playing a little ditty, and we get started. Hope you enjoy.
Mr. Phil DeGree here in the house. I'm in his house.
Plus pedal? Check this out, man.
No, I've never
seen that. Wow. But nice. It's weird because you can, like, set the decay. It's like the freeze pedal, but a lot more sophisticated.
Oh yeah, it's really cool.
And it's and there's no and it's like you can go halfway, like half
who
volume.
Makes those? Wow.
I'm sitting in New Orleans with Phil DeGree, the one and only. And I'm glad we could finally make this happen, man. Thanks for having me over.
My pleasure. So great to have you here.
This is great. Beautiful view.
Yeah.
Of the park. And, man, the sun's out. We just sat down. It was pouring down rain when I left my house, and now the sun's out.
It's New Orleans, man.
It was that chord. Chord did it.
Three seasons in a week here. The other thing I like to say to people don't have a clue about this place, we have two speeds here in New Orleans, stop and mildew. If you can get that and embrace it, you might have a chance.
Well, I mean, you know, I've been a fan of yours for a long time, Phil.
Wow.
You're definitely, I would say the most original guitar player to come out of New Orleans that I know of. I mean, I challenge anybody to come up with anybody else. I'm talking originality, man. Your guitars
so
and your approach and everything. For those of you that listened to the podcast, about 4 or 5 episodes ago, I did one with Emily Hughes, who is the daughter of the late, great Lenny Bro. And Phil, I'm sure you got many stories. You study with Lenny, you were a friend.
Yeah.
And I used part of your lesson that you had sent me a while back, and then I ran into you at Snug Hardware. I was like, man, I hope that was all right. And you're like, cool. And I said, by the way, I want to get you on the podcast. So here we are.
Nice.
So anyway, but you are a native New Orleanian. You've been here your whole life, right?
This is correct.
Who were some of your early influences? I mean, before you got into doing your own thing and before Lenny Bro and those cats.
You know, the Beatles and, you know, I was forbidden to play my brother's guitar when I was in sixth grade, and he was in, I guess, 10th grade. So, obviously, I started playing his guitar. Then he found out, and he was cool about it. And I started getting more interested in it and, you know, loving the attention. I was in an eighth grade band, and I was in seventh grade, and, you know, playing Animals and Rolling Stones. Then high school came along and started getting more into different things, Eric Clapton, and discovered Roy Buchanan.
Mm.
So after high school, I started just playing a lot. And then I met somebody who was taking lessons with Hank Mackey. Right at the end of high school and right after, I really fell in love with Chet Atkins. It was like just blowing my mind. What the hell is he doing technically? You know, he was like a trickster. Like, how is he doing that? I couldn't hear it. You know, I was picking up the needle in the record and moving it over. You know, just like we did. And I heard that Hank knew how to play in that style. So I got together with Hank, and that was just a world.
Now, Hank Mackey,
world opening.
I've never met him, but I've heard all about him. He was a New Orleans guy,
yeah,
right? Or was
yeah.
he North Shore?
No. He lives on the North Shore now, but he still teaches twice a week
at
Todd's
okay,
Music
still,
Express.
Wow.
On Monday and Wednesday, I believe. But he taught for so many years in Lakeview at Roger Filiberto's studio, and then it became World of Strings, you know. And that's right when Howard Roberts was going around and touring. Before he opened GIT, he was going around doing these seminars, and I went to 2 of them.
So Howard Roberts came here to New Orleans?
Yeah, twice. Wow. And the second time was a 3-day seminar.
Wow.
Yeah. And I got to eat lunch with Hank and Howard Roberts and Les Wise, so I was like just flying high with that shit. And then after Hank, Hank got in the chat. And then I just started listening to jazz stuff, and I was working at this record store. Just so many things were happening, you know, Joe Pass, and you know, I loved fingerstyle guitar. I was into Leo Kottke, and then I started listening to classical music and just opening up the ears, you know. And by the time I was 21, I was in Los Angeles, and I was taking private lessons with Ronnie Eshjay. Hank's good friend, who, you know, they went to Loyola together. And so Ronnie was badass, you know, in 1976, that's when I was 21. So then I talked to Hank, and Hank says, heard Lenny moved to Nashville, and he's teaching there. So I got my little camper truck and rode on to Nashville and met him there.
Is that where that lesson was recorded that
time?
No,
that was the first time I met him. I kind of hung out around there for about a week, and unfortunately, it was a dark period, you know, and he wasn't doing that well. But I still learned a lot of incredible things from him.
Like, what would a lesson with Lenny be like? Like, how long would it always be different, or would it be sporadic sometimes, depending on his mood, or would you come with topics in mind, or would you just
Like, how did you do this? Like the harmonic things, where I knew the technique, but what he was doing was foreign to me. It was like, specifically, like at the end of one of the tunes on Live at Shelley's Manhole, one of the most incredible records that he did. He'd have this going, and he. Seven strings, so I got. And man, he'd say, "Man, just get this going, and let the other finger fly, man." Just, you know, with these stuff like that, you know, or just show me the voicings, how he'd get the, why would you do that chord, Lenny? And then just, it was pretty fascinating.
Well, I learned that the other day. You ever hear that?
Yeah, not that. It's just,
well, it's like doing this. You know, it's using A flat on the bottom instead.
D7 chord.
Yeah, it's like a D7 with the A flat on the bottom. Let me turn this thing on.
And he'd show me some pretty unusual techniques, like with the right hand, like one being like to get a tremolo going. I sort of could do the traditional tremolo, you know, like I can't do it because anyway. So Lenny showed me a technique where to go on from one string to another, like just getting this going. He'd do this.
Are you just using your two? You're using, how many fingers on your right hand are you using?
I'm doing everything but the pinky, and what I'm doing is like thumb.
Yeah.
So I'm going from third string to second string. So I'm doing thumb, then third finger, second string, then index finger, third string, then second finger. So, but to get it going, and then that frees up your thumb to go. That's one of the many things he showed me.
I've never seen anybody else do that. I mean,
I didn't know that technique either.
You can do the bastardized, you know.
Yeah, whatever. That's... Yeah, whatever. Man. Wow.
I mean, but I... That's just hack classical technique.
Yeah. You know,
but I never got it together. And I think the flamenco guys do it reversed or something, right?
And, well, that's the other thing. He studied the flamenco thing for a couple of years. I mean, it was, like, strictly that. And so he's got this sabicus... And he's doing it with a thumb pick, so it's just totally.
Now you've never used
changing.
A thumb pick, even though you.
I tried when you know Hank said, "Well, if you really want to sound like Chet, you got to use a thumb pick." And I tried, and I just couldn't deal with it, and I just kept doing it with my thumb. And
well, that sounds great.
And then I started doing chord arrangements, chord melody arrangements, you know. Fast forward 4 years later, I happened to be coming back from the Northeast, stopping in Nashville to see a friend. Lenny Bro's in town. He wasn't living there, but he was visiting. And he was like playing that night. And it so happened that he had the seven string guitar with the high A. And I asked him for a lesson the next day, and I went over to his hotel, and we hung out, and I played for him. And he could see that I did a lot of work since the 4 years that's transpired. So he goes, look, I got to bring this amp back to Chet. I want you to play for Chet.
Wow.
That was on my 25th birthday, man.
Wow.
I'll never forget that. So that was quite a day. On the other side of the story is Lenny was married at the time to this wife who really didn't, who was pretty much control freak. So I went off with Lenny, and before we went to see Chet, we pulled over to the liquor store, and Lenny got like a bottle of peach brandy or something. But so by the time, a few hours later, when I bring him back to the hotel, his wife was not pleased. And we know what happened a few years later. But that's 1980. 83, he came to visit me.
Sorry to interrupt, but you got to talk about Chet. So you tell us what happened.
And while I'm there, and we're hanging out for like an hour or two, and Lenny and Chet are playing, and you know, and Les Paul calls at the same time.
God.
So you see, yeah, it was just like I am
everything's colliding.
It was just a trip.
So you played for Chet.
Yeah, and I had my little 330, you know, and I was But
you remember what you played for him?
I think I played some variations on Freight Train and maybe some, I forget what else, maybe My Foolish Heart or something. Or My Romance, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was nervous as can be.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
But it worked out. So then I get the harp guitar built 3 years later. And I send a picture to a guitar player, care of Lenny Bro, and he got it, you know. And he calls me, and he goes, man, I'm coming to New Orleans. I'm going to sell a guitar to somebody who lives around here in Denman Springs or whatever. So he came over, and I put him up for over a week, you know. And again, it was dark and really frictitious with the wife, who was like, and this is 83, and there was not even caller ID yet. You know, caller ID is the best invention since the loss of privacy, man. But anyway, so I know I had to disconnect the phone from the wall because of her relentlessness. So on and on. He did a concert here that I put together. It went really well.
Where was it at?
A friend of mine knew somebody who had an office space on Esplanade and Charters.
Mm-hmm.
And we just cleared out the room and rented like 40 chairs or so. And it went pretty well.
Wow.
Yeah. And he played the his seven string, you know. And what he did, the genius of it all, it was an Aria made in Japan. It was not a very expensive guitar. It was about $800 or so at the time, which, you know, would probably be $2,000 or $3,000 now. But he took the bass string off that it came with, and he put fishing line for the high A, because there was no other...
Nobody had anything that high.
Right, and he made it work. So he's getting all these Bill Evans voices, and he's getting the melody, you know, and just transferring all the stuff that he was doing on six string, because he was so much into Bill Evans and learning all these Bill Evans tunes, plus all the other stuff he knew, and adapting to the seven string. And he was really doing some new stuff. Wow. And that's when I decided, well, I'm going to get a seven string, just like him. Came back home after that 1980 trip and ordered one. Hank got it for cost. And I loved it. I really put more than a year. And I said, well, I'm going to stick with the seven string idea, but I have to get a seven string build for me. I want an electric guitar, a solid body. I want a sustain, you know. I wanted to sound like Lenny did on his records with that sustain. But anyway, kept thinking about extra strings, and then that was the first harp guitar by Jimmy Foster. It was just a monstrosity, though. I had to put a pad on my leg. It was so heavy. We had no clue. You know, you do things and you don't...
Sure, yeah. You're trying to work out the kinks while you're building it.
And you don't know the problems that's involved. Like I didn't have a short enough scale length string for the high A, so I kept popping the string. It was sort of a nightmare, but I kept at it, and the sound sucked. I didn't have the right pickup. Seymour Duncan, I had to wait a few years for that pickup. It was just...
Wow, that's a commitment.
Anytime you get custom things, you know, there's a price to pay.
You study with Lenny. I mean, did you ever play in, how can I phrase this, like a regular top 40 band, like regular conventional guitar, or early on did you make the decision?
I did some wedding gigs around here.
I mean, I'm not talking like, you know, people hire you for your own thing, you know, because I know you as you're, like I said, original. You just do your thing. But did you, back in, before you got into, you know, your own custom guitars and your own style and your own voice, were you a working cat, like playing conventional guitar parts?
Not as much as the other cats, like Scott Gudo and Steve. You know, they had a lot of gigs like that, and could play with anybody, and they could read, which I really couldn't. I could read charts, you know. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, I get a call from... after the first record came out in 1995, Innuendo Out the Other, I guess Donald Fagen or Walter Becker, they heard it.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And they, you know, they're calling me, and I'm thinking, well, maybe they want me to do a little opening solo trip. And I had no clue how to play this stuff, man. I mean, that's some serious reading. It's intricate music. You know, it's a whole different style, and I was still... I couldn't even deal with a six string at the moment.
So they called you for the Steely Dan gig.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I kind of just told them the truth, like, yeah, I can read charts, but I'm not a good reader. And I kind of, it was.
Wow.
I knew that it wasn't going to happen. I knew that I wasn't a guy. I mean, there's so many other guys that could have done that so much better. I don't know why, what they were thinking.
That was probably the time that Wayne Krantz stepped in, you know? But that's
maybe
really...
I think I was a little later, because this, we're talking like 95,
okay,
or 90, 96 or something like that.
Yeah, well, that would have been John Harrington then. But
yeah, I met John. He's a wonderful guy. Great
player.
Yeah,
he's a great guy. Yeah. He's been on here too. This, my podcast.
Nice.
Well, man, that is like even more interesting to me, the fact that you just
you've done your own thing. You know, and I've always been interested.
And then the rumors are, I turned them down.
Oh, that, that's even
like,
better.
It's so stupid, man. It's like, I really would love to do it, but I knew.
Yeah.
You know, besides that little voice of, you know, fear of failure and all that, you know, that's some serious shit.
It would have been a unique thing.
I probably would have more of a chance now because I started playing six string again and feeling more comfortable because I was exclusively into the seven string and I'd get confused on the six string. Plus, I didn't have a sound. I didn't have, you know, I didn't have pedals and I didn't.
Well, I would think a lot of that gig, I mean, I've known a few of the guitar players on that gig. I would think a lot of it is, you know, somebody like Jay Graydon played the classic, was it Peg?
Yeah, Peg.
I mean, you don't, it's,
they're still,
it's sacred. Like, you don't go on the gig and not play those parts. You
right.
know what I mean? And you're expected to nail the, you know, even the fans know those solos.
Right.
Well, Krantz didn't do it. He basically just played whatever.
It's such a body of work, too. I mean, there's so many.
So I would think that would be kind of a requirement, maybe. I don't know, maybe. I respect that about Donald Fagen and Walter Becker. They always liked really good players.
Yeah.
You know, and they always pulled from kind of unusual.
Well, you know the story about Peg. I mean, that, I think Jay was like the seventh guitarist.
I've heard about it.
And
he did it one take.
And Walter said, or maybe it was Donald who said, just think of it as a blues. 13-bar blues or something like that. And he got it.
13-bar blues.
It's classic.
Incarnations are you into now with the guitars? Which one is that?
This one's the fourth harp guitar. The one right before this is about 3 years old. The one before this is Ralph Novak, who really set me free because of the fan fret idea. And it works so well. And it just feels so right. So if I get it like on a straight fretted guitar, it's kind of strange. It's just, and you can get it fanned, like Charlie Hunter has it wildly fanned, like a peacock. And I have kind of a normal thing where it's the actual perpendicular fret is on the 12th fret.
I see, yeah.
And so
it just helps with the fingering and intonation, too? Or
the intonation. Each string has its own intonation. I think if Pythagoras was building guitars today, he would do a fan fret. And this guitar, it just lends itself to that.
Yeah, that's really,
you know, I mean, the weird chords, like,
yeah.
But
I love the clusters too. You know, where you hold one, like you get the, or what is it like the? You should show me. I don't know, but the cluster.
Yeah.
When one's just, up and
I'm doing all five fingers, so I'm holding. I'm doing the harmonic on top, on the bottom. On this is a sixth string. It's actually a B flat minor. So I've got. So Lenny hit me to some incredible stuff.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And then I just keep experimenting with different things, you know. Just keep, you know, just as an exercise, just to keep it going, you know. And sometimes I incorporate it in an arrangement or derangement.
I've seen some of your derangement. The one night at Snug Harbor, I watched you do the Twilight Zone one, which was amazing.
Oh.
Was it a song? It was a song for blues for Rod Serling.
Yes. And it's a weird time. I don't even know what
it's time. Been a while since you played her.
It's supposed to be fast in.
There was another one that I saw on YouTube. It's you're at a, I don't know if it was a, it was somebody's party or something. I think it's Beatles. You do some amazing medleys of. I mean, I don't know. How long does it take you to put, like a Beatles, one of your.
The
Beatles
medleys medley? Evolve, you know. Recently I put, probably a 12-minute Beatle medley together. And it's like, well, am I going to start with this one and leave that one out? So, but, yeah, I've been into that. I'm into a lot of medleys. I don't know why.
Uh-huh.
I just...
What's the latest one you're working on?
Probably that, you know.
Hey, do you write all this stuff down or make notes or record it or you just retain
it? I'm really...
Yeah.
I almost said the word inbred, but
because all I just fingering,
I write down when I'm, you know, the names of the tunes, yeah. You know, and how long they are. Let's see, you know, trying to get. But at one point, I had like 20 of them, but some of them are like 20 seconds, you know. So it's weird. It's kind of. You know, like I'll come out of Here Comes the Sun. From one to the other, yeah. And so that's worked out in the last year or so. I like that one. I do the Wizard of Oz medley forever.
That's the one. That's the one I saw. It's amazing.
I'll belt this out in the right moment and the right time and everything. Please shut the fuck up. We are playing Giant's Therapy. It's a tune by Coltrane. When you talk, it's a shame. Shut up. IA251.
You know, I had a bass player one time. He goes, "You know Giant Steps?" I said, "Yeah." And he goes, "Can you play the changes?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I start playing them, you know, whatever, like real fast. And he's going, "Tell me when I hit a wrong note." And he starts going, and it worked over the whole thing.
I can just break out. Yeah. You just keep going. Or like one of these things.
I'll tell you one thing that aggravated me though is I don't like it when people take Charlie Parker solos and scat over them and write lyrics or Manhattan Transfer where they're like, "Oh, those giant steps,
yeah.
Oh, calling giant
You know what? There is one record that I kind of dig that, and it's Roshan Roland Kirk, The Return of the 2,000-Pound Man or something like that. And he does both Giant Steps and There'll Never Be Another You with these singers, and it sounds like, you know, singers that do radio jingles like WTI, yeah, very on money, just... Life went really
like Jordan Ayers or something.
Was like playing on him. And then, you know, Kirk takes it out and it's fucking amazing.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, he starts playing, it's instantly out.
It's incredible.
Two horns, nose.
I remember riding around with Lenny listening to that in my cassette player in my truck. That
wow.
When I'm hanging around with him, he said, wow, man, he was blown away.
Just Duet, it's you have Charlie Hunter and Mike Stern and Reeves Gabrels, and I forget all the other people. It's a great record, man.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I've had that for a long time.
It took a while.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. When you made that record, did you record, like, for instance, Mike's parts? Did you send him the track or did you cut it live?
No, we sat in the studio for hours, man.
So you went up to New York and did it?
And we just, he's so focusing, all he needs is coffee. Yeah. And you know, yeah, I was in New York at this little studio owned by Dave Lawrence, and real great engineer, wonderful player, and that's where I recorded with Larry Coryell too. That was probably the first guy that I got together with for this duet thing. Then here I got together with Hank and Steve Mazakowski, and it was a trip. So it took maybe 6 or 7 years
just to get everything,
you know, because it started in the late 90s, and by the time it finally came out, and it's just everything, you know, just editing. Another guy that really made it a trip is Dave Tronzo,
who plays exclusively
a slide player. And when you say slide player, you're thinking
blues,
not roots, rock, you know, body and soul, no problem, you know.
Yeah.
Really an amazing player. So that was an all day, and that was a lot of editing because we had so many interesting things going on. And it was just a matter of extraction and editing. And then we'd put it in between the tunes. Like, we'd put 20 seconds or 40 seconds in between of this insanity that we were doing and calling it something crazy. You know? And I like the one with Larry. That was felt really good. We were doing harmonics together. It was Lenny's From Heaven. Sorry, man, no reverb for you.
That's all right. Reverb. I don't know what to play, man.
You got a little more volume?
about like a standard or something?
Yeah, you can call one out and see if I know it.
You know, I don't know the head, I don't think, but there is no greater love. You know
yeah.
that? Want to do that?
Yeah.
But wait. Thank you. nice. I just let you take it, man. The ending was that chord. Wow, what was that chord?
I was, you know, it's sort of like, I call it the bipolar chord. Yeah, you know this.
Wow.
It just may look a little weird on the seventh string here, but then, see, I got the third up here.
So, oh, right.
So if that's a root, or that's a root, so it's a B altered, you know. And,
ooh, what is that? The third on top? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's dense.
The cool thing about this chord also, it can be E altered, right? So then if you do a harmonic, I got the open B string, the B harmonic. So it's a whole, rather than.
Yeah, that's all. I do little things like that. Or
that's amazing. Nice.
I shouldn't even do this in front of you, but I can just these little. I can never get it fast. Like,
are you using your third? Yeah, man.
I can never get it to flow. Like,
well, you know, when I first heard Chet do that stuff, I thought he was doing, I didn't know the technique, so I'm like trying to, each one was a harmonic, right. And then Hank explained how it's a natural note and a harmonic and
it
a natural.
It gives you that yeah. step, yeah, the jagged thing.
Yeah, and then Lenny with all the embellishments, you know, like, and Ted, you know, but, you know, with the
oh yeah, the scales, wow. Oh wow. It almost sounds like a pedal steel with the bar shift.
Yeah.
Like, it's just seamless.
I love
man.
Pedal steel. Here's another thing that's been going on, thanks to Krantz and Clemens.
He's another great player,
well,
yeah.
New Orleans incredible game. Player. But he turned me on to the whammy pedal, and I said, okay, I've heard of this. And then after I had it for a while, I said, let me see what the harp strings sound like through it. So now I can, you know, it's like. So that's the first harp string, so check it out.
Oh,
so I have
wow.
it set to a fifth. So it is like a upper register pedal steel.
Yeah.
And then I can just get subtle things, you know, because before it was just set. I couldn't do, you know, it was just.
Oh, I love that.
It's out there, man. Now then I have this, two, this whammy.
Yeah, you have two whammy pedals. That's yeah. what I was going to ask you.
And then this whammy I use for different things. So right now I have it set. So if I do. This chord, open strings. I have it set to a fifth, so when I press the button, it plays this chord plus that chord, which to me is the most shimmering thing in the world. So when you're doing chords like this,
yeah,
you know, if you're doing altered chords, it's not going to work, but it's that fifth. Just to get that. Check out this ending, if you would. It's an ending for On a Sunny Afternoon for the Kinks.
Yeah. Thank you.
I mean, it's like the sunlight on the water, on the ocean, mm-hmm. just shimmering. I don't know.
It's like very, Eventide had a patch that was similar a long time ago, but you're doing it with just your hands and a whammy pedal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like double whammy.
It's like just some kind of Majestic Kingdom fits.
Yeah.
I see your photo right there of Lenny, and I gotta ask, was that one of his thumb picks?
That is.
Yeah, I figured so. That's it, with a
and that's Hank and tattoo. Ted Green behind him.
Wow.
Yeah. In
LA. Ted Green, man, there was another guy who.
And Lenny and Ted, you know, they got together and they recorded it. It was like a whole day.
In a studio or
no, just it probably, I'm not sure where in LA. I don't know if it was at Ted's house, but there's a woman in the background who kind of talks and makes comments, and it's kind of, I think it was Lenny's girlfriend at the time. Mm. This is, we're talking like 78. And we're talking 8 hours. They just sat down there and played. And I think Scott Page was, you know, Scott Page?
No.
Is that his name? Seals and Crofts guitarist.
Okay.
Anyway, he was.
Was he? He was friends with.
Yeah.
Ted or one of the guys.
Yeah, and so it was just like four of them sitting around, and Lenny and Ted, and they're both blowing each other's mind. Ted would play for Lenny, and Lenny would just. And you know, because Ted's got all this classical thing going, then Lenny would play his Bill Evans thing or whatever, and they would just talk. It was pretty incredible. I'll get you some copies because it's 8 CDs.
Oh, so you have them?
Yeah, yeah.
And you can hear the woman making comments and stuff. Yeah.
It needs some fierce editing, but you know.
Wow, that's
I'm sure Jay Graydon. Jay Graydon can probably take it out with, take out the voice with all his tricks because he's amazing. He really polished my record up.
Well, Jay Graydon was involved with your record. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Which record? Because I want to talk about your records. Too.
Yeah, it's the latest one was just a few months. October.
The recent one.
Yeah, Mask and You Shall Deceive.
Yeah, I saw the cover. Yeah, it's very Beefheartish cover. Yeah, I love that.
And Jay volunteered to help out doing this because as far as the mixing, he did some serious mixing. I mean, he would get out.
The squeaks.
You know, just he's so meticulous. And he's worked with so many people and he's got incredible gear and ears. So, I mean, he really brought it to life.
Where did you record it?
I recorded it at Jay Griggs' house in Ponchatoula. He's got a nice little studio there. And him and Jay Graydon, I get the J's confused, Jay Griggs and Jay Graydon.
I didn't know Jay Griggs knew Jay Graydon. Wow, that's a small world.
He didn't until...
Oh, until you got involved.
Yeah.
I see, okay.
Yeah, and first Jay started saying, well, if you do this and that, you know, you should... Well, if you want me to, I'll be, you know, no charge. It's just real... labor of love.
Well, you have a lot of fans, you know. You have a lot of guitar fans. How did Steve Vai hear about you? Like, you know, all the people that...
I met him through Matt Resnikoff, who's he was a writer and for different magazines. And I remember meeting him at the House of Blues when Steve was playing his gig. It wasn't a Dweezil gig. And... that was that. And in fact, Steve Lukather was either playing the next night there, and he was there, and we were chugging.
He's a madman. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about now, but man, it was quite a night. So that's where I met those two Steves. It was pretty crazy. Yeah. Explain to some people who who don't know about this place, who've never been here. It's like we have an 11th commandment here, or maybe the first commandment. Thou shalt not commit adulthood. It's just party.
It's a loud party vibe going.
But yeah. So, and then the dark side of that. So it's a wild carnival where it's tragedy and comedy all mixed up.
That's you know? very eloquently stated. Have you ever thought about it? I mean, you've been here your whole life. Have you ever lived anywhere else or thought about going anywhere else at any point in your life?
Not really. I lived in California for a few months, and specifically Big Sur, which is, that was a really incredible time. I met some incredible people there. I'm still in touch with them. And I go off to New York and in L.A. Sid Jacobs is a good buddy of mine, always inspired by what he's doing. He's an amazing player, amazing teacher. But you know, it's hard to get away from this crazy place. It's just, I don't know what it is.
I've managed to slip away for a while, but
it's great that you can do that. That you have New York.
Unfortunately, Anders Osborne told me something one time. He said, "The river, the crescent, the way it pulls you, and it's got some energy, and I don't mm-hmm. know, it's a little metaphysical for me, but I kind of believe that, because of the mm-hmm. where the crescent, it's like it creates this vortex or this magnet." And
I think Bienville warned not to settle here for different reasons. First of all, we're underground,
right?
You know, I think there's a theory why it's the funkiest city in the world, because it's underground. The humidity, nobody can tune up.
Right.
Nobody's tuning up in this town, man. And in the whole voodoo thing, the chemicals, chemical abuse, and I'm talking about Exxon chemicals or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just it's a funk, man.
Yeah, it's funky.
And people come here to break the law, you know, corporations and such, you know.
There was something I read recently where they were talking, somebody was talking about the way notes affect the human ear depending on the humidity levels. You know, the way mm-hmm. a note could travel or the resonance of a frequency and things like that. So down here, it must be.
Yeah.
Because it's a beautiful day outside right now, but it's probably 60% humidity outside, you know.
Hey, Google, what's humidity?
The humidity in New Orleans right now is 74%.
There you go.
It was like 87 earlier today.
But one thing in New York, man, I had to buy humidifiers for my guitars, because I have a lot of nice guitars up
yeah.
there. And I'm thinking, wait, I have to buy a machine to produce humidity. So,
right.
So far, it's such a crazy concept. You know, you never have to worry about like old Martins or Gibsons
right.
here. It's fine.
Try living in the West.
Yeah.
Ooh. It's the opposite effect. It starts cracking because of other reasons.
Yeah.
Here it just expands. And it's like Johnny Vodakovich said, you need gills to live here.
That sounds like something.
Yeah. I love it. Somebody, Cranston, turned me on to Jeff Beck playing along with a real bird. He calls it Blackbird, but it's not the Beatles tune. It's the bird singing, and then here's Jeff answering
really?
It. Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
And I've recorded songbirds in the middle of the night back when. And one of the great moments in my life, I'm like, This bird is incredible. He's just not repeating himself, doing incredible, just like, it's like 1 o'clock in the morning in Old Metairie. Everything's quiet. Mm-hmm. I'm recording for a few minutes. It's amazing. Then all of a sudden, the train horn from about a mile away sounds, and the bird stops. So I wait a few minutes and nothing. And then, let me see what I got. So I rewind and I start playing it back. he starts mocking himself.
Wow.
Yeah. I thought, that's this is like a National Geographic moment. I just don't have a second recorder to get the... But it was mind-blowing. Yeah. So I love birds, especially the songbirds.
Yeah.
It's like, it's so humbling. It's like, what are we doing even trying to... this is it, man. This is, how do you top this?
Right.
Yeah. So, but we try.
Phil's got these beautiful wind chimes in here, and... That's like sounds like the G flat six.
Yeah, man.
You know, Charles Neville told me this story. Maybe this was before your time, I'm sure. But he said when Johnny Smith is that Moonlight in Vermont?
Yeah.
That right?
Yeah, man.
And he said that when that's a C6, like a spread thing where you put your first finger.
Yeah.
Fifth finger. Charles Neville said that every guitar player that he knew in New Orleans would hear that recording and go, oh, that's two guitar players playing that.
Yeah.
There's no way you could play that voicing. And when he played in New Orleans, people's minds were blown. He was like the 1950s or 60s Alan Holdsworth.
Right.
You know, because nobody could do that voicing. It's just pretty simple. But
yeah. I do.
Or Mr. Sandman. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Sure. Yeah. What about playing Moonlight in Vermont?
I've never played it in my life, but what are the chords? If you tell me the chords, I can...
It's
C6.
Yeah, it's 165. Subdominant minor. Da, da, da. Yeah. Then 2-5. Da, da, da. And does it second A, then the bridge is just 2-5 to E. Six. Two. Let's hit like two. One, two, three, four. Thank you. sound.
Me the thing I saw on YouTube, somebody posted Jimmy Weibel stuff.
Oh,
and he's playing at a restaurant. Yeah, and like
I know what you're talking about. Sid Jacobs is one of his was one of his best friends, and Sid does some incredible Jimmy Weibel stuff.
I used to know a couple of his pieces, the really out there things, like the 2/5s, like one of the things was
nice.
And I used to play these guys.
Yeah, yeah. Holy shit, man.
That's a minor 2/5. Jimmy Weibel, that's all.
Wow.
But it's like, forget.
It almost sounds like you're doing harmonics, the way it's, the voices are.
Or that that Joe DiOrio stuff, you know, like...
Yeah, yeah.
I loved him the other day. Like, he does this thing where it's. But then I changed it to where it would work over, like.
Nice.
So it's a little more.
Yeah. I like that, the same, that double note. Yeah, yeah. But, no, that reminded me of this, not just an exercise, just not caring, but just to have that, and it gets harder. So if you start on the on high E, yeah, yeah,
yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah. Wow, it sounds. Wow, that sounds like Lenny.
Yeah, it is like a fake. I don't know. I'd learn like the Chet things, like.
Wow.
You know the scale.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I've been doing some abstract shit like that with. Sorry. I love patterns, and I got into that sonic shape thing that Howard was passing around when he was touring, doing the seminars before
what was
GIT.
That? That was sonic shape.
Like, you know, stuff like. Or. That would be the. You know, that kind of stuff. And then I started just doing like finger style. Like, just doing this. And going up a flat fifth and doing the same thing. But traversing across the neck. So I'm doing. Not changing the shape either. The notes change. Then coming back down. And then.
So you just invert the shape.
Yeah. All it is this. And this. And then. And that's it. And then you do it up the same shape. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah. Or you can just like experiment and just.
Wow.
I don't know what that is.
Jeez.
It sounds good if you get some delay and stuff on it.
I sort of do something like, if you like on this, where I'm just doing hammer-ons and then.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
And then to the harp strings. It's fucking. shot.
Yeah,
man.
I love that. Sick.
Man. Yeah. Thank you.
Nice. If you're listening to this driving, you might want to pull over. You might get the swirliness, the dissonance. This,
don't listen to this while driving.
That's great.
They cause drowsiness.
What the hell was that? It was weird.
Look at yeah, man. Now I want to practice. Holy shit.
Well, me too, man.
Man.
Well, we should play some time where I don't have this thing on.
I'd love to. I'll come your way, man.
Yeah, come over. Thanks so much for doing this, man. Yeah, that was
such a pleasure, man.
Such a blast.
Yeah, I really appreciate it, Shane.
Now I need to go home and practice all that.
We don't stop practicing.
No, that's for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Thanks again, man.
Thank you.